This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined by the entire Orange Bloods gang, Dustin, Alex, Anwar, Jason, fellas. And we should remind everybody as we get started, 1-800-SOLD-OUT, TicketCity.com. Use your Orange Blood subscription to help you get cheaper tickets. They will give you a discount. You just have to contact them. Let your subscription make enough money that it pays for itself. And it's not that difficult to do when you consider all of the various perks and things that we can make available with our partners over at OrangeBloods.com. Fellas, it's funny. A week ago, we started the podcast off and we were jokingly talking about there wasn't a lot of football stuff to talk about because we've hit the offseason now. And the guys, we're still weeks away from spring football, although not that many weeks. But, you know, offseason conditioning, there's not a ton of storylines. I know we can talk a little bit about Larry Fedora at some point in this podcast. But I find it interesting that I did a podcast yesterday that I originally recorded on Tuesday for the Yak. And I kept telling myself, how do I do a podcast that won't sound exactly like the recruiting podcast that Jason Sukumel is going to do with Something's Brewing? And I just realized, you got to play the hits. We're all writing about recruiting right now. It's pretty interesting to me. While we're in this lull, there's so much in recruiting and so many stories to talk about and narratives, whether or not it's Stan Drayton and his role of recruiting and what he needs to do to get Zachary Evans or the event from this weekend or 2020 in totality, as Dustin wrote about yesterday in his column about what this class has a chance to be. Jason, I'll start with you. The thing I've been asking myself all week is what we're seeing right now, is this what would have been happening almost in any year where we hit this kind of dead period of the football discussion? Or do we find ourselves caught up in the momentum a little bit of what Texas has going in recruiting, the big names that they're looking at? And have we reached a new era with our coverage in the way that we all seem excited about talking about recruiting?
The answer is all the above. I mean, yes, it's that time of year where recruiting, especially due to the early signing period, it's kind of changed the calendar on us a little bit. But, recruiting's hot right now. You got junior days. You've got players taking visits. You have Under Armour camps, Rivals camps. You have Nike camps coming up in the next few weeks. So there's a lot of recruiting stuff to talk about. But I certainly think, you know, people are more willing to talk about it because there's such an excitement level with recruiting. I mean, Texas is doing a good job in the 2020 class. They've had, two commitments last weekend. They're up to 5 commitments. You know, I know Dustin wrote about it. I talked about it in my Something's Brewing podcast. The Rivals 100 comes out. There are 26 five-star players on the Rivals 100. 8 of those 26 have either been to campus numerous times for some of them, or they're planning to come to campus this spring. Now, we'll see if they all make it in. I mean, a lot of these guys are out-of-state guys, but 8 out of 26. I mean, you've got a 5-star running back from California visiting this weekend, and I don't want to say it didn't move the needle, but that was my lead in my 3-2-1 column, and people are like, okay, yeah, whatever. You got Zach Evans still out there, and you know, Justin Flo, everybody wants to talk about Keely Ringo. But I mean, it is a different era in Texas recruiting. Now, does that mean this is going to be a historic 2020 recruiting class? Not necessarily. There's a long way to go. You got to close the deal on these guys. But boy, I tell you what, the Texas coaches, the program has put itself in a position where this has a chance, and that's all you want at this point, as a chance to be an elite recruiting year, an elite recruiting program, which then, you know, that stuff snowballs and takes off. And that's what national championship type programs are built around. But yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time. I mean, last weekend, again, two commitments. They had a bunch of top guys on campus last weekend. I'll be in Houston on Sunday for a rivals camp. I'll see guys like Zachary Evans. I know Alex saw him last weekend at the Under Armour camp. Vernon Broughton, I mean, several other, pull up the list, but a bunch of elite prospects will be at that Houston camp. The Dallas Rivals camp is next weekend, but, you know, just a fun time to cover recruiting. There's a lot to talk about. And it's funny you mentioned that, Kitch. I actually kind of let off my Something's Brewing podcast, and I kind of just talked about that. I said, you know, sometimes when I record those podcasts, I'm thinking, all right, what am I going to talk about for on this episode? You know, what am I going to, I'm going to fill 30 minutes or so. Well, you know, I scribbled down some notes yesterday, and I'm thinking, holy shit, this could be a long podcast, but you got two commitments to break down. You've got Rivals had its first leg of the Rivals camp series was last weekend in LA. And I had a guy kind of grab me some interviews from the top players out there. We had, what, four updates from five-star players at that camp who all said, yeah, Texas is high on my list. I'm gonna visit. You had junior day. I haven't even mentioned they had two official visitors last weekend from offensive linemen who were on campus last weekend. You've got the Rivals 100. You've got the Rivals camp in Houston this weekend. So lots to talk about. I don't want to dominate, and just kind of take over this podcast. But, yeah, we could pretty much kill the entire podcast if we wanted just talking about recruiting.
Well, Ketch, can I just jump in real quick?
Of course.
I think a lot of what he's talking about, the excitement about recruiting, what you're talking about, Ketch, is also a reflection of the excitement about the program itself. Mm-hmm. I think the program being in a good position when you're talking about coming off a 10-win season, you're talking about a Sugar Bowl victory, and you're talking about the faith that people have in Tom Herman and the staff and his kind of development. I think that plays into people being excited, in these months about the recruiting and the exciting additions of, okay, these guys can come in here and be additions to what is a good program. Like, technically on paper, Charlie Strong recruited well, but no one was really excited in the offseason about it. I think for me, that just what I just noticed as a guy who's covered most of the crappy years and now is actually getting to cover some good years, I've noticed that now that this team is good, it's seemingly carrying over into the offseason.
Well, you're certainly right, Almar. And, in years past, when a guy like Justin Flo mentioned Texas or Keely Ringo or Kendall Milton, five-star top national out-of-state players, Texas normally gets thrown in that initial grouping of whatever, 15, 20 schools just because Texas is Texas, okay? But normally, like, okay, yeah, right, whatever. You put Texas on your list, kid. That, we know nothing's going to transpire there. But now when Justin Flo mentions Texas, I mean, it's legitimate interest. I mean, the dude shows up to events wearing Texas gear. He's supposed to visit. He said he's going to visit at some point this spring. Keely Ringo, the five-star cornerback, he's already visited Texas twice. I mean, it's not just lip service when these kids are mentioning Texas. And to your point, Almar, a big part of that is because of what Texas has built, what these coaches have built, the excitement around the program, the success around the program. It's fun to cover right now. And again, I mean, listen, we are in mid to late February. There's a long way to go. I mean, these stories will take some twists and turns. I'm not saying Texas is going to get all those guys, but if you look at eight of the current 26 five-star players, again, have either visited Texas or plan to visit Texas this spring. I'm not talking about next November. And they're talking about, hey, I'm going to come at some point in the next couple months. If Texas can get two or three of those dudes, and I think that is entirely realistic, hell, that number could go to four or five if the dominoes fall the right way. I mean, then you're talking about a whole other world of recruiting as well as Texas has recruited the past 2 years. I mean, that would be a whole other level. This is, you're talking about then a class that will stack up potentially could be the number one class in the country. That's best case scenario. Is it going to happen? I don't know. We have to kind of follow these stories as they develop, but it's a legitimate conversation to have right now. It's not incredibly far-fetched to think about that happening.
Yeah, and to your point, Jason, Rivals released a story today. Like the three analysts that are out there, Adam Gorney, Rob Cassidy, and Adam Friedman, made their predictions for guys at the LA camp. And two of them predicted Texas for Justin Flo, and one of them predicted Texas for Kelee Ringo. Like, when we say it's legitimate, it's legitimate. And I can't remember the last time that we've had a recruiting cycle where Texas is legitimately in on multiple out-of-state five-star prospects, and also guys that are in the top 10 overall in the country. You know, this is it's been a long time since Texas has played since Texas has signed just one guy inside the top 10. I think, you know, Malcolm Brown, the running back, was number 10 overall. And I think Jonathan Gray was like number 5. And that's really it, going all the way back to Sergio Kendall. And we've got people, you know, analysts, you know, regional analysts predicting Texas as a school that's going to get some of these guys. No, like you said, it's extremely early, but there's so many times where Texas will offer, you know, a five-star out-of-state guy, and it's like, ah, they offered him. Texas might make the top 10, but it's not really serious. It's serious with some of these guys. And you mentioned the dominoes falling in the right place. I think when you look at the recruiting landscape nationally, especially out on the West Coast, it's setting up to where if you're a Texas or a program like that that's recruited that area well recently, it's setting up to where you could potentially have some big success out there, because USC is having its issues, because UCLA is not really a recruiting threat. You know, you're seeing a lot more big name programs try to get in there and get guys. And I just can't remember the last time a class even had this type of potential, as it relates to so many five-star prospects.
I hadn't seen that article, Dustin. I'm looking at it now as you talk, and it's a funny backstory. I actually had, I'll just say, one of those analysts reach out to me about Justin Flo. So I think I swayed his pick. He's like, "Hey man, what's Texas's chances with Justin Flo?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think Texas feels like they got a decent chance." And, you know, a couple other guys on that list I'm looking at, one person, Adam Gorney, our West Coast analyst, picked Kelee Ringo to go to Texas. Somebody picked Georgia. Somebody picked Ohio State. I would think Washington is a major player there. I would think Alabama, what I've heard, is going to be a major player there also. But I like Texas's chances with Kelee Ringo as much as anybody on that list. So, you know, Kelee Ringo, Justin Flo, we mentioned Kendall Milton on that. He's on that prediction list. You got one pick for LSU, one pick for Ohio State, or two picks for LSU, I'm sorry, one pick for Ohio State. Bijan Robinson is another running back. I wrote about him yesterday, a Rivals 100 running back. You got UCLA, you've got Oklahoma, you've got Ohio State picks there. But again, he's going to visit Texas in late March. So, I mean, Texas is heavily involved with a lot of these players. And listen, and if I'm having to bet right now, and I don't put much confidence in these picks, but if you're asking me who's going to get Zachary Evans, the in-state running back, of course, my money's on Texas. Who's going to get Justin Flo? I'm 50-50 on maybe Texas, and I would probably go Alabama. I slightly lean Texas, call it 51-49. If you're asking me, Kelee Ringo, the five-star corner out of Arizona, who's my money on right now? I'm putting my money on Texas, man. That's three of those dudes. Not only do I think Texas has a good chance, I think those are three guys that maybe Texas is the leader at this point. Now, I always want to hedge my bets on those, because those guys aren't planning on deciding until a lot of them until December or even February of next year. But right now, as it stands, my money would be on Texas for three of those guys.
Anwar, it's really interesting for me in that, first of all, Jason, when we talk about the Sugar Bowl or we talk about a win over Oklahoma in October, and there's always this rush from a lot of maybe newer fans of recruiting who, does that mean that Aggies are going to flip and that we can go out and get this guy and is going to impact that guy? And they always, a lot of times, think about it in the perspective of like the here and the now and a recruiting class that might be a month or two away, if that, from putting pen to paper. And it's so hard to sway a kid that late in the process because they're so far down the road. We always tell people this is about putting money in the bank for 2020 and those big wins, the growth in the program, you'll see it in that following class. That's where you would expect the momentum to be. And it is. And Anwar, the thing that I wanted to like kind of give the coaching staff a real attaboy on is that, you know, they worked real hard behind the scenes so that if and when they did catch lightning in a bottle on the field, they could run with that momentum immediately, as opposed to the wins representing the beginning. They were already recruiting these guys and trying to get in the door, and then they've been given like some momentum and a push through their success. But I think it's a real credit to them that this soon, this quickly, I mean, they haven't done anything on the national stage in beating Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. That's close, but everybody's so focused on the playoff and so focused on, you know, national championships and things like that. It's, again, I tip my cap to the work that Tom Herman and his coaching staff have put in, that they're this hot, this quick, after a taste of success, not even a flood of it.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Ketch, because you can sense it. I think other people can sense it. I mean, you look at the commit from Mookie Cooper recently, right? And you see a guy who works for Oklahoma kind of subtweeting things, and they start, you know, they're talking about what, you know, what they have and their rings and this and that and the championships. And of course, Brian Carrington claps back and says something to him. But it's almost like, dude, if you're putting yourself out there like that, that you're that upset that Texas got a guy that you wanted and you're verbally putting it out there, it kind of makes you look like you're a little bit shook. It kind of makes it looks like you guys are a little bit concerned, because you've had a lot of these teams in the Big 12, teams throughout the country have been able to recruit against the Texas program that hasn't really been good. It's been a while since they've actually had to recruit against a team that the Texas program actually had 10 wins. I mean, we're going back to the Colt McCoy days. And so you're right, Ketch, in the fact that, you know, Texas threw their hat in there. Yeah, you know, I know the people inside the building feel really good about their transition class to start off with. They feel really good about the guys that they've been able to recruit as grad transfers. They feel like from, you know, Kendall Moore up until last year, they feel really good about the guys that they've been able to add there. And now with that success, you know, now they're able to really get into some of these, you know, bigger name guys, guys throughout the country, California guys, still trying to emphasize recruiting in state. Yeah, so, the way they're doing with Carrington, you got Drew Maringer doing well. It's really, I mean, people will find faults and they'll say, okay, there are a couple, maybe this guy's a weak link or this guy's a weak link, but overall, pretty strong coming off of just a 10-win season. It's be interesting to see how it unfolds going forward.
How much do we think that this is Zach Evans as a recruit feels like, you know, in the old days, I think that's a kid that would have meant 1,000 subscribers in terms of recruiting, and the way you think back to the Ryan Perilou days. What do you think the number one factor is? And Alex, I want you to jump in too, because you're on Orange Bloods in part because it was recruiting interest that led you to Orange Bloods, and then history kind of takes over from there. It's fascinating to me because I feel like for so long recruiting has been looked at with a bit of a snarky attitude by Texas fans. They've seen good recruiting and they've also seen bad football come with it. And yet it has only taken a little bit of success for all of a sudden everybody to fall back in love with big name prospects and to not necessarily be jaded that they're going to be wasted if they get here. Look, you went and covered, like I said, every single one of us has written about recruiting in the last week or so. And I would have said a year ago, like, it was like, who wants to write about that? Let's just leave it for Sukumel.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so what's the question about Zach? I mean, about Zach Evans?
Well, no, I'm just curious, like, your perspective on this sudden change of interest and the way people are just taking recruiting information in. I really believe, and the numbers dictate that for so long, we would write recruiting content and it felt like we couldn't get people to get. Am I wrong, Jason? Like, you know, I was like, hey, there's a lot of good recruiting information. Read this. And it felt like there was a bit of a, people were just kind of lukewarm to – they were so focused on the football, they didn't want to talk about recruiting until football got good. And now that football's just a little bit good, it feels like everybody is devouring the recruiting information to the point that when I released my rankings for the Lone Star Recruiting 2020 last week, it did double the amount of traffic – that the same article did, actually did three times the amount of page views that the exact same article and like information from the previous year had generated. Like, that's substantial. And it makes me think that, like, when we think about Dustin and you and me and Anwar, like, maybe there's a redistribution of interest and focus in certain areas of the program that we need to think about putting more of our resources in.
Well, I don't have, like, I didn't have a theory on that until you just started talking about it. But I mean, I quickly came to a theory as you were talking about it. And my theory is that even though recruiting was good under Charlie Strong and that we were, under the last, I mean, look, during the last years of Mac Brown, even like there were still big name out of state, like Jordan Hicks comes to mind, Malik Jefferson, these guys come to mind, all these, the big recruitments in that that 2015 class, right? So I think, though, as people got excited about those classes and, with all the ways they were pumped up through the offseason, what they've gotten on the football field has been heaping piles of dog shit, right? And so I'd say eventually it probably got to the point where it's like, man, how can we get excited about all this recruiting when all it is, these coaches and these analysts just peeing on our legs, telling us that it's raining outside, and what are we getting out of this? We're getting 6-6 a football team, we're getting a 5-7 football program, so basically we're talking about groceries here for a chef that's incapable of putting together a decent meal, right? And now I think with any taste of winning, you're saying, all right, look, we got the chef back in the kitchen now, let's get this dude some groceries. I mean, that's just my personal theory. Like, I think the football has to be good for people to be excited about recruiting, because if recruiting is good and football is not good, then people just get. I mean, what else could you think just naturally, right? Like, obviously, recruiting doesn't really matter that much, right? That's just what you're naturally inclined to believe and what you're naturally inclined to, sort of. Whether it's conscious or not, I'd say that the interest, welling back up in the board has to do with the fact that football is good again. And when football is good and recruiting is good, that's when the really, really big stuff starts happening in college football.
It's probably the best thing that could happen for Shaka Smart is that the football program be really good. And on some level, they can just like view it as that thing in their peripheral that they don't have to completely be all in and care about. If it's bad, then you just get angry, and the things that make you angry, you get even angrier about. And I wonder if some of this soft attitude towards Shock and like, hey, he's probably going to get another year. I wonder what it would be like if Texas was 6-6 and everybody was just walking around angry all the time about everything. Jason, back to the events from this weekend. Let's do this. Cause as I think about like the things that we need to cover, it was a big weekend. There was a couple of commitments. They did get Bryson Washington back on campus again for – how many times is that for him officially?
I don't know officially. I would guess I think maybe four, but it was second time in the past 3 weeks, which is the key thing to know there, is that he was in for that kind of elite junior day, if you want to call it a junior day, when they hosted guys like Zach Evans and Chad Lindbergh and – Prince Dorba for the Oklahoma basketball game 3 weeks ago. And then Bryson was back on campus last weekend. So two times in a 3 week span is pretty indicative of how strongly he feels about Texas.
And he's going to hit my magic six number pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, he'll get there. Yeah.
By the spring game, he may have already attended a practice and he might hit lucky number six. I'm actually working on an article for my 10 thoughts from the weekend this week will be charting the top guys that Texas is recruiting and kind of where they are on that unofficial, official, what by any means necessary how many times have they been on campus? Because it does feel like these guys, like Zach Evans has been on campus a lot. When you
I better start digging through my old notes is what you're telling me, huh?
Yeah, because I'm going to ask
you. All my old Zach Evans.
There's
everything else. Yeah.
You know, I do a lot of words. I'll do word searches. I'll go through every war room and everything like that. But yeah, I may be like, hey, I've got Evans here five times. Can you think of any other? Let's talk about Mookie Cooper for a second, right? Because from the commitment standpoint, Mookie Cooper was the headliner. And then Jalen Garth, the story there is almost about the collection of offensive linemen that they're adding. But let's talk about both things independently, starting with Mookie Cooper, whose name we already mentioned earlier in the podcast. Guys, I'll let anybody who wants to jump in with some Mookie Cooper thoughts jump in. But I think that this is one football-playing son of a gun. He just makes everything he does look easy. And I thought the national guys had it right when they put him in the national, right near like the national top 60, which
67. Yeah. Moved him up to 67.
That means he's in that almost fringe five-star discussion territory. And I don't know that he'll get there because I don't know how he would test with the elite of the elite, but as a football player, man, just put some pads on that kid, put a ball on the field. And I feel like that's the kind of guy that will take care of everything else.
I think I'll start. I think he'll test well. I mean, he's fast and explosive and has the things, you know, if he goes to the Nike camp, there used to be the spark rating. I forget what they call it now, but I think he'll test well. I think the biggest hang up with moving him up the rankings will be his size. He's not a big guy, but I mean, listen, man, the commitment of Mookie Cooper, I don't think it's drawn the discussion probably that it should have. I mean, this is an out-of-state player. He's a legit national 100 player. He is one of the most explosive athletes in the entire country. I mean, you put his film on. It's funny. You watch his film. I went back and watched it yesterday just to kind of freshen up. And back when he was a freshman, he attended a rivals camp. And he's just killing guys at that rivals camp as a freshman. Including, he's actually matched up with Justin Flo. I think it was like the underclassman combine or something. But this is a guy who's been good for a while. He's really good. Then you put on his junior film from last year. First thing that stands out is this guy's character. He's an easy guy to like. He's an easy guy if you get to know him and talk to him. And I've been covering him for about a year. He's a fun guy to cover, a fun guy to like. He's accessible, easy guy to like. He's very accessible, just kind of pleasant to talk to, if you will. But you put on his video. The first five or six clips of his highlight film are him like blocking and pancaking guys downfield. Man, this is a 5'10 slot receiver, you know, and it's his first highlights are him just showing the physical aspect of it. And then you keep watching, it's like, holy crap, man, he's just running by guys and making plays in space. And his film and just his skill set remind me a lot of Jake Smith, the receiver Texas just signed in the 2019 class. I mean, To the point that they both line up in the slot, they can both make plays out of the backfield. They get the ball on jet sweeps. Mookie's film even shows them doing some defense. In both their films, I shit you not, when I watched both their films, the first time I saw them, I was like, wait, are those sped up? I mean, they almost look sped up. That's how fast those dudes are. I mean, Mookie's Cooper's film seriously reminds me a lot of Jake Smith's film and just how explosive he is and his ability to make plays and take it to the house. And it was interesting, you know, this Jake Smith's always been the natural comparison when you say, okay, who does he compare to for me? But this weekend, Mookie was asked, like, who do you compare your game to? And I thought it was interesting. He said a name Texas fans will be familiar with. He compares himself to Rondale Moore, the guy who was committed to Texas, of course, went to Purdue. I'm pretty sure he was a freshman All-American. Hell, there was even Heisman talk about him at some point as a true freshman. And, you know, I can kind of see it, man. He goes, you know, we're both undersized. People kind of take us for granted because our size, but they're both explosive, big playmakers, can do things out of the slot, can be special teams guys. But, you know, there's been so much going on, and you had the Houston Under Armour camp and the Zachary Evans talk and junior day last weekend. You know, Mookie's commitment brought some excitement, but I'm not sure it generated the type of excitement that it probably should have among Texas fans because there's so much other stuff going on. But, I mean, just a tremendous, tremendous pickup in an early, a great job to pick, to get his commitment early by the Texas staff. Brian Carrington was heavily involved there. Obviously, Drew Maringer, Todd Herman, Tim Beck, just a great job, great pickup. I mean, he's the kind of guy you can really almost build this class around, and you know he's going to help. Having him on the commitment list is going to help reel in other players and help Texas's chances with other top prospects.
Dustin, what'd you think of Mookie? Or what do you think of Mookie?
Mookie Betts is awesome. Mookie Cooper is he's pretty awesome as well. He's just one of those guys. We talked about it with Whittington and Jake Smith. The Texas offense needs more of those guys, more of those just electric, put the ball in their hands playmakers. You know, another guy that I think he's got a pretty good track background as well. And I think that that's something that the Texas coaches seemingly really value is, you know, these skill guys, like, do you run track? Like, can we look at a track time for you and compare the football speed to the track speed as well? So, I think it's a big get. I think that I wasn't surprised that, you know, he made a move in the Rivals 100. I think he's that type of playmaker. I think that he could move him all around the defense. You know, Jason mentioned Jake Smith. I think there are a lot of similarities there in terms of, you know, move him around, just get the ball in his hands, you know, whether it's slot, whether it's, you know, occasional receiver or occasional running back touch here or there, or moving him, you know, punt returner, kick returner, wherever. The offense needs more of those guys. And it's another St. Louis guy. You know, quietly, Texas has developed a little bit of a pipeline in St. Louis. Going back multiple years now, you know, most recently with Marcus Washington, those two are obviously really close, but that's a good area to get some roots established because it consistently puts out top talent. But I mean, this, you know, these are the types of playmakers that Texas needs. So we're not rattling off that stat about lack of explosive plays. These are the kind of guys that can turn a potential 10-yard gain into a, you know, a 60-yard gain because what they can do in the open field.
He's Anwar. Tom has read your stats on explosive plays and like over 50 yards, and he's like the wolf in Pulp Fiction. He's on the motherfucker, man. Like, just give him time. He's bringing those guys in.
Yeah, he ain't playing. I mean, so he's definitely has looked at his guys and have said, okay, how do we get some explosive stuff? And when you look at Mookie, he's one of these guys, when I looked at his film, right, Ketch, he's one of these guys that you're like, is he moving that fast or are my eyes moving that slow? And it just seems, oh, he is moving that fast. It just kind of crazy like that. And yeah, Tom Herman is – Ketch, when you play against the Oklahomas of the world, you play against some of the Oklahoma states, but you know, you look at Oklahoma and when you just got guys who could just make guys miss and make it so easy at times. And then you look at the Texas offense and how they just have to dink and duck. And almost kind of reminds me sometimes of that John Gruden West Coast offense that is just takes so much time to get things going. You're dinking and dunking. And I remember John Gruden used to tell me, well, a 3-yard pass is just as good as a 3-yard run. So, you know, that's his mentality. But if you can just get guys who can just flat out fly and make your life a lot easier, it definitely helps. And I think Tom Herman has just said, all right, I know what I have and I know how I need to improve. And he's definitely doing his best to make his life a lot easier by adding these explosive playmakers.
Alex, on the offensive lineman front, you were in Houston this past weekend. You looked at some big fellas. You wrote about it over on the website. How much have you looked at film of Jalen Garth, the kid that committed this weekend? Jason and I have joked about it. I think he had his commitment story written for about a month, and I had the instant analysis piece written for a month, and we just waited. Because the reason why I ask, obviously, is it feels like Texas is 3/5 of the way through a 5-man in-state offensive line class that it seems destined to want. Like, they're recruiting. As soon as that one happened, Jason, we saw, you know, Logan Parr tweeting at Damian George and Chad Lindbergh, like, hey, get in this thing. It feels like the totality of this group is going to, and we've talked a little bit about this idea of them building a class of beef to some degree inside of this class, but you can really see the pieces of it coming together now. I'm curious, you're like our resident O-line guy, just your thoughts on O-line. Look, You just talk about what Texas has in your mind on the offensive line front based on what you've seen. And I'd love to get a little insight on what you thought from the weekend after paying a lot of attention to what was going on at the Under Armour camp.
Yeah, well, I mean, my first question, like the first question I had about Jalen Garth when I was watching, just watching him after that commitment came down. Obviously, I hadn't been watching him for a month or whatever. Like, you know, I hadn't been following it, you know, that closely. So I just watched him recently, and I was wondering if Jason, have you talked to, like, have you gotten a height weight on him?
You know, I'd have to look at my notes, Alex. I think he's, I want to say he was about
6'5".
And about 270. You know, he's, I wouldn't say light, but he's, you know, he's just a high school junior still. But yeah, I'd have to look
at
my
notes. If he's only 275 or something, then he's not 6'5". So that, I mean, my thoughts on him are that he needs to work on his feet. He needs to work on his balance. I think he needs to work a little bit on his hand placement. But clearly he's long. I'd like to know exactly how big he is. It looks like, you know, once he gets engaged with you and he's in closed space, he's really hard to get off of. But, you know, as far as his second level stuff, I just think he needs to work a little. Do you know who he reminds me of a little bit whenever you watch his film? Maybe like Kennedy Estelle or somebody whenever he was coming out. Does that sound fair? I'll tell you this. I'm not as impressed with Jalen Garth as I am as some of these other guys like the Lindberghs, even the Logan Parrs.
I don't know if he's as fluid of an athlete as Kennedy Estelle.
Well,
was.
The bulky knees and stuff are what made me think of Kennedy Estelle.
Interesting.
You know, but I don't know, man. Like he could be a lot better, and it's really hard to judge these guys off of their huddle highlights. I always like to see him more kind of in person, but it just seems to me like Garth. Just when I watched the film, I remember thinking this guy's a little bit lumbering, you know, a little bit bulky. Some more to do with the balance there, with the hand placement, with the ability to get, or the not the ability, but the even in the highlights, like even these good plays, whenever you can see him pancaking these dudes, like a lot of the times he's kind of saving himself from bad overextension. So those are my
Alex,
thoughts on
I
him.
Got an answer for you. Jalen Garth tells me he's 6'5", 285 right now. So
okay.
How's that for real-time data there, brother?
Was that real-time live texting getting an
I literally
answer?
Just texted him. 6'5", 285. I said, what's an accurate height and weight, and he said 6'5", 285. So, you know, that's he claims it's accurate, but there you go.
I think the kid Lindbergh, I know he's not a commit yet, but he's 6'6", 325 with 35-inch arms. I mean, he's got the length for days, nine and a half inch hands. Whenever I talked to him, you know, he told me the Texas likes him at the tackle position. They, you know, he needs to be a little bit leaner. And, you know, that's the same thing that I thought. He's still kind of a baby faced guy, a little bit of baby fat still on him, but you can tell that the frame is really good. And all that he just had a shoulder, a slight shoulder. I'm sorry, guys. I'm a little bit under the weather today. he had a slight shoulder thing that he had going on, so he didn't take part in a whole lot of the camp. But during the parts of camp where he could just kind of stay on his feet, where they're doing their footwork drills, their lateral agility, and their change of direction stuff, he was probably best on his feet of anybody there at that thing. And he was certainly one of the biggest guys. I really think that he could fit in well. I think that guy's got a whole lot of tools, and he should be towards the top of I'm sure he is towards the top of the recruiting board, because he's certainly very high on Texas and told me that Texas is sure to be a runner in his recruitment to the very end. I think it has to do a lot with his relationship with Logan Parr, who is also there. Looks like he thinks of himself as a center. I'm sure that he's going to need to be a guard or a center at Texas. But whenever they called out at the camp for, all right, all centers come over here, like he was the first one running over there in line to grab a football and be with the first group as the center with the group. So he definitely fancies himself a center. And look, man, the way that kid looks, like one of the things I wrote about when I was writing it up, and Jason and Dustin, you guys will know this phenomenon from going to all these camps. You know when they do the one-on-ones and they're wearing those really tight clothes? And like in the OLDO one-on-ones, they, you know, the offensive line and defensive line, they, in order to get any kind of leverage or anything like that, they're always grabbing at each other's, you know, those jerseys. Those jerseys are so tight and stuff, but they're still managed to get their hands on them and kind of, they kind of rip each other's clothes off a little bit as they're going through
these, every time, yes,
through, the, every through, time. Through these drills. And the, and since these guys are kind of flabby, the first thing after the drill's over, like the first thing they do is like, is they try and get their jersey back on to cover up the flab and stuff like that. this guy Logan Parr, it's like he's more like a Connor Williams. He doesn't care. He just kind of he lets it all hang out because he doesn't really have that much flab on him. He's built so sturdy, but it's just hard, like maybe sturdy, but just very slender too. Not he's thick, right? Real thick, real sturdy, but not that much fat on him, you know. He's kind of like a rock, and it makes him look really solid. He's got a really good anchor on him, a little bit, not quite as big as Lindbergh. The one thing I did notice, and I noticed it right at the beginning of the camp, whenever they did the whenever they were doing their karaoke, where they would do the switch over to the high step karaoke on every other foot, right? Like every other step. Like I noticed right then, I said, wow, like he has some stiffness in his hips that he's going to need to work out. And I definitely noticed that throughout the course of the day, because he actually did those one-on-ones, won more of his one-on-ones than he lost, but the ones that he did lose had to do very easily and very specifically with his inside hand placement against these one shades that would try to bull rush him or even try and kind of rip across him. With his hand placement, he's just going to need to work on it, but moves his feet really well, keeps his hips upfield. Like I said, the hips are a little bit stiff, but at least he keeps them upfield, keeps his guy in front of him. If he gets his punch right and his hand placement right, he'll keep his hands on him. So I guess where I am with Logan Parr is that he's another one of these guys that just shows tremendous attributes and just small things about his game that need to be corrected, that can be coached very, very easily. Whereas I look at a guy like Jalen Garth, I not quite as high on him, simply because it seems like some of, and I need to see them live. If like just from watching, you know, however, like a 7-minute huddle reel, that's really all I've done on Jalen Garth. I need to see him live. I like to watch some tape of him from camp, but it seems to me that it's more of a confluence of issues than any one that I can particularly identify and say this is the reason why he, you know, lost this rep. Or like even when I'm looking at highlights of Garth, there are issues that I see kind of crop up, and I'm probably going to have to do a little bit more kind of deep digging as to why he reminds me of Kennedy Estelle. I know, Ketch, you said that you thought Kennedy Estelle was a real fluid athlete.
Well, no, I mean direct comparison. Like I just think
Was Kennedy Estelle as a – because I don't remember him as much as a recruit as I do as just a young player at Texas when he wasn't very good. As a recruit, like the attributes that he put on film were – like I'm sure they were very good. Yeah. Was he a highly touted guy?
He really was. I mean, he was – I'm looking at – he was the number 67 player in the country.
Okay.
And, you know, he had offers from everybody. And ultimately, it came down, you know – Alabama, Auburn. I think Kendall Briles was recruiting him at Baylor. I'm looking at the database, but yeah, man, he was. Didn't he come down to UCLA in Texas at the end, Jason, for Kennedy Estelle? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
I don't see UCLA. I can't honestly. Remember. I honestly am drawing a blank. I honestly, he's so far off my radar at this point. I can't remember who
it's. It was 7 years ago.
Was it that long? Holy
yes. Shit.
I thought it was an in-state battle. Am I crazy? Hell, I don't. You probably remember better than I do.
Well, when they don't end up being very good,
exactly. Doesn't really matter.
let's move on a little bit away from recruiting for a little bit. Let's move on to the football side of things. Because Onward, there's a question I've been dying to ask you for 2 days. You ready for it?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you are here. I know that you unmuted. You heard your name and you popped up ready to go. Larry Fedora, could Tom Herman have made this hire a year ago with this seemingly so much heat in the kitchen on Tim Beck after year one?
Well,
very few people on War have said, oh, they just hired the next offensive. You know what I mean? Like, there's been less of this guy next year could be in control of the offense. Like, I've seen very little of that, actually. Most people have been like, maybe if Stan Drayton has a bad year, this is his replacement. And I'm thinking Larry Fedora's days of probably being just a position coach. Like, I have to think that that would be a very big backward step for him, that it would be a coordinator position at worst that he would look for. And yet I don't get the sense that there's a whole lot of thought that Tom Herman has made a future investment here beyond just this season.
Well, you're killing a portion of my war room with the question, but it's fine. We'll give a teaser because we know that everyone who listens to the podcast, you know, there's people who won't listen to our podcast, right? And those are going to be the people who want transcriptions, and those will be the people who will read the war room tonight. So it's okay.
They don't want to listen to a podcast on war, but they want to read an hour and a half transcript.
Yes, because that makes sense. And every radio show you listen to, they transcribe too. So it's okay. Anyway, here's what I do know. Your observations are correct. I did some, talking to some sources actually yesterday, just kind of making some calls. And from what I've been told is the hiring of Larry Fedora is not him thinking, Tom Herman thinking five steps ahead. Like, okay, if I get him in place now, if things go bad with Tim Beck, then he ends up being the guy. It's kind of the opposite of that. This is the job. This is what the job entails. You're an analyst, and that's it. There's no thoughts, from what I'm being told, from people who know Tom Herman, that there's been no thoughts, innuendos, that this could lead to anything other than what it is. Now, if a guy leaves, let's say Drew Maringer gets a job, right, and he goes somewhere else as an OC, is there a possibility that they say, hey, we put Fedora on the road for a little bit, maybe to excel, promote him? That's a possibility. That obviously between him and Brian Carrington as guys who would potentially go on the road. But right now, this is a pure analyst job. With the potential of adding some more former head coaches, obviously they're waiting on David Beatty. There could be a potential third person that could be in the mix at some point. Don't know a name or anything like that, but some of the thinking processes that have been out there and some of the things that have been communicated with me. But what I'm seeing is this is kind of almost Saban-esque. When you see Saban bringing in those type of guys who say, okay, you are here to be an analyst and this is your job, and just kind of leaning on these kind of experts to dissect film, break down certain things, do certain analytics on maybe it's one specific aspect of it. I want you to focus in on this and then see what you can give me. Not necessarily game planning, but focusing on a specific aspect of it, and that is going to be what Fedora does. But that would be it, and that's the only part of job description.
What was
War room done? War room done. By the way, you guys transcribe that. I'm going to chill.
What's everybody else's thoughts on this Fedora move? Like it, everybody's made the. It feels like a move that Nick Saban would make. It's a fascinating one for me because it was just a couple of years ago. It's funny when, Larry Fedora's name was being mentioned as a possible head coaching candidate for Texas. I'm less interested about this idea that his stock has fallen, that in a few years he's gone as a guy that could have been potentially a candidate for the head coaching job to an analyst. But it is, it's a very confident hire to bring in somebody whose wheelhouse is your wheelhouse, whose reputation in a lot of ways is probably longer and more extensive than yours. I thought it said a lot about Tom Herman's thirst to get better, that he didn't worry about any notion that either toes might get stepped on or feelings could get hurt or anxiety meters could go up. He just looked at it as like, this guy's way overqualified to be at this position, but if we can get him, we'll take him.
Yeah, I'll jump. I agree.
Mic drop.
I agree with everything you said, though. I mean, listen, if the guy's willing to come, and you're seeing more and more of this happen all the time, I mean, I'm guessing he still gets his buyout money and whatever else. So, you know, why the hell not bring him in? Don't worry about hurting feelings. I mean, if it's going to make your program better, I mean, I think everybody probably knows. I mean, that's, you know, Tom Herman is going to do whatever he can do within his means to get Texas to the top of the mountain. I mean, be it creative ways of recruiting and hiring recruiting assistants and staff personnel. And, you know, we keep saying Nick Saban. I mean, Saban has been doing this for years and it sure as hell works for him. You know, if that's the program everybody pretty much wants to model themselves after, and you can get a guy like Larry Fedora and his knowledge and his expertise and his experience and, you know, offensive knowledge on staff, just to bounce ideas, why not? I mean, if, you know, if that would ruffle some feathers on the staff, well, so be it. I mean, if it's going to make your team better, it just seems like a no brainer decision, and sounds like it should have been an easy decision for Tom Herman.
Anything else on the Fedora front that needs to be discussed, whether it's from Anwar or anybody else?
No, I got nothing.
I think it's pretty cut and dry. I mean, you're adding a former head coach, and you mentioned it. I mean, you can go back and find, if you went in the search engine on our board today, I bet you could go back and find a bunch of posts about Larry Fedora potentially being a head coaching candidate at Texas. You're adding that guy as an analyst. I mean, that's, you know, that's a definite win-win type situation. And, you know, if he moves on, he moves on, you know, hire another guy like that. But I think it does speak a little bit to the reputation Texas is building as a program, that a guy like that would want to come to Texas and be an analyst. Like you said, Ketch, it's kind of the move that you'd see at Alabama, you know, adding one of those former head coaches at a legitimate program to staff as just an analyst and before he gets his next job.
And yeah, it's interesting to think that. Oh, I'm sorry, who was that? Was that Alex? I apologize. Go ahead.
No, it was me. I was just going to say that Texas is attractive enough after one good season that a guy like that picked, because he probably could have been an analyst at a lot of places, because it looks good, I think, for any, like, he could have gone to Clemson or he could have gone anywhere. And I think people would have been like, that's a fantastic off field hire. I think it stands out more for me, less that Texas got him, but that, again, like a lot of these recruits, there seems to be a clamoring and a rush to jump on the Texas Express after a very short amount of sample size of success. I mean, you know, Texas probably wouldn't have looked that attractive a year ago, but a year later, yeah, I'll go be an analyst in Austin. That's not going to look bad on my resume. Again, I'm a bit just, it's like one of those mental notes on war that I'm making where it's like, oh, so this is what people think of what Tom Herman's doing at Texas.
Yeah, I was just, you know, I actually catch you kind of echo what I was thinking about, which was, you know, a couple of things, which is you're starting to see Tom Herman almost look like the CEO that you thought he was going to be when he was hired. You know, I think people may have had some questions after year one. I think those questions seemingly have been answered. But you see him doing the right things, putting the right people in place. A lot of the question marks that people may have even had, like you even addressed before, even about the coaching staff, you don't see that anymore. And you just see this momentum building, seemingly, that you see this momentum building, whether it's recruiting, whether it's some of these, you know, hirings. Because don't forget, I mean, last year, what his best hires and arguably one of the best hires of his staff was adding in Herb Hand. And, you know, he went out and realized he needed a good offensive line coach, and he brought in Herb Hand from Auburn. And then he does a move like this when he brings in a guy like Fedora. Like, you could just see like the momentum going, and you can see the building of the program. And I can see, it's easy to see why Longhorn fans get excited about it.
What else do we have on the football recruiting front? Anybody got something that they want to talk about? Like, I'm getting ready to ask Dustin a basketball question.
No, I'll probably address it in my closing thoughts, but the Houston Rivals Camp is this weekend. I mentioned that earlier. I think in Dallas next weekend. But I'll talk about that a little bit, probably in my closing thoughts. So the platform is all yours and Dustin's.
Dustin, this is a bit, you know, is HEPA, forget about the concussion for a second.
Is HEPA a bust after a year? Like, are they getting more or less? Or like, I think a lot of people thought that guy was going to come in this year and be more of a difference maker. And he's been just kind of a guy this year. And I'm just curious. I don't feel like there's been a lot of discussion about it because, boy, there's a lot of other talking points with the basketball program. But I have to admit, I expected more of Jericho Sims this year, and I expected more of HEPA, and it probably played into, like, what I thought this team could be, and that those two guys aren't, you know, I'm not blaming the season on them by any stretch of the imagination because it's more complicated than that. I just expected more, I think, from a sophomore in Sims, but definitely in HEPA's first season.
Oh, yeah. You expected more. I expected way more from Jericho Sims as a sophomore. I mean, I remember talking to people in the summer about him and what he'd been doing in practice. And they were talking about – it was funny. They were talking about him in the summer the way people started to talk about Jackson Hayes before the season. And I don't know if the emergence of Hayes, you know, just affected Jericho or what went on there. But it was just like he was going up, up, up in the summer, and then all of a sudden it just plateaued in the way people were describing. Meanwhile, here comes Jackson, and his arrow is just shooting up in the right direction, and he carries that into the season. So, I was definitely expecting a lot more from Jericho. He started to figure it out a little bit more recently, but just the emergence of Hayes and how steady Osikowski has been has really limited some of those front court minutes. I do think – Kamaka HEPA, I expected a little bit more from him, especially because this is a guy that arrived, you know, known for his skill as a four man, but also his ability to shoot the basketball. And I think that, you know, I underestimated it. Maybe Texas did as well. Just the jump for him in terms of competition in the game at this level. You know, you got to remember, this is a guy that grew up in Barrow, Alaska. You know, basically the most northern remote place in the United States. I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere. I mean, he once described one time the process of just flying from like Barrow to Austin. I think it was like three flights in like a 2 or 3 hour drive, depending on what time of the year it is, where you could drive over ice or how you would get into Barrow. So I think we underestimated a little bit just that transition from, you know, it's not too long ago, this was a guy that was playing Alaska high school basketball, and then he ended up finishing his career his last two seasons in Portland, Oregon. But even he admitted one time when we talked to him a few months ago that it's just been a big adjustment process. And then I think there was a point in time where Osikowski's play was dipping and Kamaka was kind of surging. And then that just kind of halted a little bit. And then, you know, he's got the concussion deal now and he just kind of fell out of the rotation. So I thought that he would give them a little more. I definitely thought heading into this year, you know, we'd all look at the perimeter shooting and say, okay, they got to find some guys to give them some more of that. This guy is a prime example of somebody that should be able to do that. And he just hasn't been able to do that. So, yeah, but definitely Jericho. I mean, I thought he was going to have a monstrous season. I mean, there are people in the summer that thought he could be the best, you know, one of the best front court players in the Big 12. I mean, this was a guy that the way he finished the season, you know, when Mohamed Bamba had his injury issues down the stretch and Texas really looked at Jericho and say, hey, man, we need you, you know, and he responded with some terrific games. He actually put himself on the radar as a potential, you know, late first round, early second round type of pick based on the conversation with scouts. So that was the kind of trajectory he was on to end the season. And he just hasn't found that confidence yet. He's such a quiet kid. You know, really, I mean, they've been trying so hard to get him to come out of his shell more. And it just hasn't really happened as a sophomore like many people thought it would.
Anything else? You know, I feel like the Texas base. Are you going to do Texas baseball and parting shots, or do you want to talk about that now? Because
no,
damn
I'll
good start.
It.
It's a damn good start.
It is. I'll save it for parting shots. But no, as it relates to basketball stuff, I mean, they're still on track to make the NCAA tournament. You know, I think that based on all the projections, which, you know, basically saying if Texas finishes 9-9 in the Big 12, that they've got a really, really good chance of getting in as an 8 or a number 9 seed. There's just not a lot of great teams in college basketball, and there's not a lot of great resumes, and there's not a lot of great leagues. So if Texas can get its way to 9-9, It's got a really good shot of getting into the NCAA tournament. I actually think they're going to go on the road at Oklahoma this weekend and win that game. That's another – it's an 11 a.m. tip, a sleepy tip-off at OU, a fan base that's totally given up on that team already this year. I think it's a really good opportunity for Texas to grab a road win. And then at that point, your margin of error increases so much more as it relates to the NCAA tournament.
You know, it's interesting, Dustin. I had the audacity and the gall to call Texas's 7-6 record in a really good Big 12 decent. I did. To be fair, I said pretty.
You didn't say that on Orange Bless, did you?
I said pretty decent.
Oh, no.
Because for me, like, decent is the only – that's a word barely above acceptable. It's just barely, right? Because they – you know, and if we'd said before the season started at this point in the year, they'd be an 8 or a 9 seed when you didn't know the record and you didn't know the context, I think a lot of people would have said, well, that's decent. What's really interesting about this basketball program is that in January and February, Texas has been pretty decent. They've not gotten their ass kicked one time in the Big 12. Like, their biggest loss is by 7 points. They've got wins over Kansas and Kansas State and a number of other pretty solid teams that are going to be in the NCAA tournament. It's what happened in December that those losses to Providence and VCU and Radford, if you take those abominations out and they just win those games that they probably should have won, it's an 18-8 team right now, and they're probably a 4 or 5 seed. But, you know, and I'm not saying to take those losses away, because you can't. They're 15-11 right now for a reason. But this team is that those losses in December, this is probably not the best analogy in the world, but it's the one I made in a podcast yesterday, and I'm going to do it again. It's like a fart in a room that won't go away. That's what those losses in December are, because in a vacuum, they've been okay in Big 12 play. They're competitive game in and game out. They're playing a really tough schedule. They've won some games. They've lost some games. And if we'd have said before the season that they'd be above 500 in conference play at this point in the schedule, I think a lot of people would have been optimistic about this being a decent little basketball season. The basketball's not always pretty, admittedly, but it's amazing that those games in December just won't leave the forefront of people's minds as they watch this team in late February.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the conversation about this season would be so much different if you know, the Radford and VCU games didn't happen, and also the way they happened with just them struggling so much on offense. And then you've got the Providence clunker as well, and they haven't turned it out to be that good. But yeah, if you look at just the Big 12, I can only think of one game where you could point to and say, you know what, Texas was just not good in that game. And that was that game at Oklahoma State, and that was the first half. They were good in the second half. They just were so bad in the first half because they didn't have the right mindset they needed to, that ended up costing them the game. They played well against Texas Tech at home. Texas Tech was just a little bit better that day. That happens. They played well at Kansas. They had a chance to tie or win that game on the final possession. They didn't play great at TCU, but they were in that game the entire way, lost by 4 points. So you go up and down the Big 12. If you just looked at the Big 12 games on its own, you'd say, okay, you know, it's not great, but it's not bad. It's probably above average, you know, maybe even a little bit more than that. But it's just those non-conference games. You know, right now we wouldn't even be talking about the bubble for Texas if they won those games, if they handled their business at home against Radford, VCU, and Providence, and really that Georgia game too, the way that played out. I mean, that was maybe the debacle of the season was that Georgia game, just the way they played and how bad Georgia is. But even if the Georgia loss happens, if you've got Radford, VCU, and Providence as wins, you know, people are probably talking about, hey, this Texas team, you know, 4 or 5 seed, they are kind of playing their best ball right now. Maybe they can make a little run in the NCAA tournament. But instead, it's just those losses just linger. Like you said, they're lingering around this program. And, you know, it's got them positioned closer to the bubble than they should. You know, if you look at their efficiency numbers, both overall and in conference play, it's a fringe top 25 team in terms of efficiency. You know, they're 31st in adjusted offense this season. and they're 34th in defense. They're not as good on defense as they were last year, but they're way better on offense. And that was our main, you know, area of focus heading into the season is can they become a much better offense? Because we know they're going to get enough defense to at least be a solid team. And they have been better on offense, but it's just those losses early in the season have just totally changed the conversation and the mood surrounding the program from Texas fans, because I think a lot of them know this should be an 18-win team right now. You know, it's hard to look past that and see some of the solid play that's happened since the Georgia game, because the overall record is just not where it needs to be.
Let's jump into parting shots. Alex, I know you're not feeling your best, so I'm going to let you go first so you can get the hell out of Dodge. Do you have a rant today? And if you do not, do I need to goad you into a rant?
No, I got no rants, man. I mean, I could complain about whatever happened in the – I don't know if I, like, picked up something or whether it's just something in the air, but it's – yeah, this is, I need to get a little nap or something, and then I'll get to call him up a little bit later today. I guess like a potpourri call him. I had a couple of thoughts that I wanted to get out, and also some pre-combine predictions. I'll be at the combine starting next week. I think I leave either Monday night or Tuesday morning. I'll be there through Sunday, so keep an eye on the message boards. I hope to have transcripts from all of the Texas play, all five of the Texas players who will be there, and also just any sort of hopefully, you know, over the course of the week, maybe snag some behind the scenes notes for the war room. And then I'll just say for my closing shot, I'm excited that I get to go into the woods this weekend, try and get my last deer of the season with my buddy Cody, who's actually on Orange Bloods, the guy who got me on Orange Bloods. So we'll be going out and hopefully filling out these last two tags. So if you're the hunting type or the sportsman type, keeping your fingers crossed for us to be able to put something on the ground this weekend and get those freezers filled up. But I don't have any kind of rant. I don't believe you.
I don't believe you. Go off about this goddamn sickness. Like, don't you have cockamamie?
I'm too tired.
It's a damn Petri dish at the daycare or whatever, right?
Yeah, it feels like it. Well, I'll tell you, here's
oh,
here's,
here we go.
Here we go.
Let it go.
I've started to come into my consciousness is these goddamn ribbons that they put inside of the credit card readers at gas stations. And now because of these bastards that put these things in here, like if you go up to the pay at the pump meter, right? It used to have one of these little keys that's like a very basic little, almost like a skeleton key that goes inside those little kind of circular key. Do you know the kind of keyhole things that I'm talking about? The little circular kind of keyhole things that they have in the little areas if they're going to be messing with the computers on top of the pay at the pump consoles that are right there by the card readers?
Yes, the ones that open it you're talking about, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, you don't need a special one to open these goddamn things. So basically, I'm hearing reports of like the HEB over at Lakeway, the pumps have been compromised. The quick cart up here by my house off of 71, one of the pumps they found had been compromised. Apparently what they're saying now is police officials are telling me that, and I've been doing it for the last couple weeks. Do you have any idea what a pain in the ass it is, especially when you have a kid in the back of your car, to have to walk take his ass out of the seat, unbuckle him, Bring his crybaby ass all the way in, tell this dolt at the front that you're having to prepay for how much in gas. You don't even know how much in gas is going to fill up your tank. You figure it's probably $25, but if it's a little bit more, you got to go back in there and you got to get the change and all the rest of this stuff. And these are all things that I'm having to do because I'm worried about my credit card number getting stolen because these gas stations –
don't make a point to make it harder to get into these consoles and to put these ribbons in there that they can literally leave in there for months, and every single person's data that is swiped inside of there is kept. And it's how, like, I've read something absurd. It's like how 60% of domestic credit card fraud occurs is because of pay at the pump, is because of these pay at the pump scandals. And none of these gas stations are letting us know. It's not saying like, hey, beware, use pay at the pump at your own notice. We're cheap motherfuckers who aren't even going to go to the trouble to make it even a little bit harder to get into this thing. We're just going to use this same factory default key that gets into all of them, and now it's going to be up to you whether you're going to take your ass inside to pay or whether you're going to pay out here at the pump and compromise your financial security. So my rant is, if you own a gas station or if you own a chain of gas stations, instead of making us walk all the way for one, let us know that we should, that we're putting ourselves at risk by using these pay at the pump machines, right? Like, that could be at least that decency should tell you to do that. But if you want to be even more decent and you want to be even better to your customers that are paying their hard-earned money for this gas, you should say, but we even go a step farther and we make it to where our pumps that have like cameras on them, and our pumps have special keys that are needed, so you don't have to worry about walking in and going to prepay this dolt at the front desk and having to unstrap your kid out of his chair and, you know, have this whole dog and pony show just to get a little bit of gas. And so, like, if I got to rant about something, that'll be my rant.
And you could just feel it building.
If you had to, that would be it, huh?
Yeah. I like that he made us beg for it a little bit.
Yeah. Right?
Like, oh, I don't really have anything. I don't have anything.
Let me tell you about these motherfucking pumps at the gas station.
Anwar, I want you to follow that.
Okay, so I'm going to start with Jussie Smollett and then end with Colin Kaepernick.
Oh,
so,
wow.
I'm joking. I don't, I was like, whoa. I'm joking. I don't have a parting shot. That's my parting shot. I'm joking.
That was not a bad parting shot having a parting shot. I was like, whoa, you're going to set this thing on fire.
Not even going there.
Let's do it. I'll give you some gasoline. Let's go. Oh.
You know, gasoline. I see what you did there.
Dustin, do you have a Manny Machado rant? Like, what do you got for a closing shot?
I think I'm going to save my free agency takes for an extra basis podcast. Although I think I'm in the minority in that free agency isn't necessarily broken. It's just things like service time and all those things. I won't bore the listeners with that. But they should be excited about the Texas baseball team that took 3 out of 4 on the road to begin the season, won the series at Louisiana, which is a solid club. Rice is a little down this year, but anytime you can go to Rice in a midweek game and pound them 11-4, that's always a good thing for Texas. So they come back to home before a 10-game homestand, 3-1. And, you know, anytime you can get a road series win, it's big come NCAA tournament selection time, because the committee always looks at who have you beat in series wins and then who have you beat on the road in series wins. So that's a nice little way for Texas to start the season, picking up a road series win at Louisiana, a team that could potentially play its way into the NCAA tournament. But it's been an exciting group to follow so far. It's got a little bit of everything. You've got some veteran guys that are playing well. You know, Austin Todd and Ryan Reynolds, two guys that didn't do really anything in the fall as they rehab from injuries, but two guys that also earned a lot of praise from David Pearson, the way that they handled the rehab process and the way they interacted with their teammates and their mature approach to everything. It's shown so far in the results this season. You've seen some up and downs from freshmen, but you've seen a lot of talent as well. I think Texas fans should be really, really excited about Eric Kennedy. I think he's got star potential offensively, and it's already starting to show. I mean, he came off the bench at Louisiana, hit a pinch hit 3-run homer the opposite way. And if you look at him, he's probably only about 5'10", you know, but he's not like, you know, very bulky, but he's really strong, can really, really run. So I know Texas is very, very excited about him, and he's starting to show that talent already. Bryce Regan has held his own at shortstop. The pitching has been a little bit of an adventure, but, you know, getting Donnie Diaz back on the mound at Rice was huge. That was his first outing at Texas ever, coming off of Tommy John surgery. You know, Mason Bryant closed out the Friday night game in a tough environment. That was his freshman debut. So they're getting a lot of these guys' feet wet and on the mound in competitive environments. And at the same time, they're winning games, which is the most important thing. So I think the one thing Texas fans should follow the closest, and the one thing that should excite them about this group is their resiliency early on this season has been really impressive. Every time they have an opportunity to respond, they've done it. You know, when Louisiana tied the game Friday 1-1 in the ninth inning, what they do? The next thing, they came out and took the lead 3-1 and ended up winning the game. You know, they took a 5-0 lead at Louisiana in the Saturday game. Blair Henley gives up 4 runs in a second. What does the bullpen do? He only gives up 1 run in 7 innings the rest of the game. And even that Sunday game that they lost, they were down 8-1 at one point. They made it 8-6, and in the ninth inning, they had the bases loaded with 2 outs with a chance to tie the game. And then obviously at Rice, Rice actually got into the scoreboard first in that Tuesday game, and it was like Texas got mad and then scored 5 runs right away. So that's something to follow with this group, because David Pierce has been high on its character and its mental makeup, and that's something that really allowed Texas to maximize its results last season is just that competitiveness and that passion to try to win baseball games. And I think that's the best, most important sign for Texas that we've seen early on this season.
And I appreciate the Longhorn Network during baseball season quite a bit, just for the record.
Yeah, like, amen on that.
I was like, why is there not baseball? Why is it – last – over the weekend, I was very frustrated at – I don't want to go on an Alex-level rant, but I was very frustrated by having to watch the Louisiana feed of the games when the Longhorn Network's such a capable entity, and they do such a great job. So cheers to the Longhorn Network. You guys don't get enough love. I appreciate you the most during baseball season. Jason, you said you had some recruiting rivals camp stuff you wanted to do in a parting shot?
Yeah, nothing crazy, but I'll start off. I actually thought about Alex and his rants last night. I made a late run to HEB's about 8:30 at night. Had to get a knee brace for my daughter and a couple small things. And
is that late? 8:30?
For me, for this old man, it is. Yeah. Well, for an HEB run, it is. But I get to the express lane, and I sat there thinking literally of Alex. I'm thinking his head would be exploding. There's 3 people in front of me. And one lady proceeds to write a check in the express lane, no less. And they have to, she has to get out her ID, and they have to take all this shit down. And then the next guy, she finally gets through with her shit. Then the next guy gets up, whatever, he had, I don't know, 10 items or something. And his card got declined. So he had to start taking things out of his bags and giving it back to the – I can hear Alex's head exploding right now. Like a gallon of milk, he goes, okay, we'll take this off. So the guy had to swipe the gallon of milk and take it off. Nope, card still declined. Okay, take this off. Finally, after taking 3 or 4 things off of his – out of his bags, his shit got okayed and his card got okayed. He was able to make his purchase. I'm just sitting there – you know, I'm in the express lane thinking, all right, I should be here for a minute, and I probably waited for 10 minutes for this shit to go through. But, yeah, so that was my – I was just thinking, man, if Alex was here, boy, would we have one hell of a
– Oh, my God, he would go crazy.
Oh, yeah, Alex would have probably dog cussed him.
Was that the line where did you have to do it yourself?
No. It was a –
You have to have 15 items or – you have to have 15 exactly, items or 15 less. Okay,
yeah, that self-checkout is bullshit, but go ahead.
Yeah. Anyways, that was kind of funny. About the Rivals Camp. Yeah, I was just going to remind everybody the Rivals Camp series started last weekend in Los Angeles. We had updates from several guys there. This weekend they'll be in Houston, and I'll be down there to cover that one. You know, we'll have updates on some big names like Zachary Evans. I know Alex did a good job of talking to Zach last week, and I'll hit him up again this week and find some different angles. You know, be some good offensive line talent there, including Damian George, Zach Evans' teammate, Prince Ayuman Milan, the defensive end, Bryson Washington, catch. We talked about him earlier. He'll be down there, so I'm excited to see him in action. So we'll have plenty of recruiting content to talk about again next week. And then the following weekend is the Dallas Rivals Camp. So it's just kind of a fun but busy time for recruiting. But we'll have lots to talk about that camp Sunday, so I guess probably Sunday night leading into next week, plenty of recruiting content to talk about.
I'm going to use my final parting shot, and I need some counsel. I just need you guys to tell me that everything is going to be okay after I tell you what my story is. For those that don't know, and let me just preface this by saying everybody turned out to be perfectly fine, not even a scratch. But a couple of weeks ago, my wife totaled my car in Houston. I will never see it again. It's just gone. It's bye-bye. It's in Houston. It died in Houston. It's at a shop in Houston. It got described as a totaled situation. Like, it's just, I lost my car, and I love my car. Even though one of Anwar's good friends, who's a football coach, clowned on my car one time because he said it wasn't nice enough, I did like my car. And now it's gone. And now I'm in this position where, you know, we have this relationship with the Covert people in Hutto. We love them. They're as important of a partner as we have. And I thought, I have to go down to Hutto and let them show me like their stuff and put me in a car. And so yesterday I go down to Covert Hutto, and the guys were great. Like, I love going down there because, you know, they're all a bunch of Orange Blood subscribers, and there's like an Aggie in there, and they all follow recruiting. So it's kind of fun to go in there and know that they're going to take care of you while getting a car. But at the same time, like, you know, they do want to sneak in the occasional Zachary Evans question. It's kind of cute. And so I start cart looking yesterday, and they're taking me based on what I told them that I was interested in. They start showing me various cars. And, you know, eventually we get to the Expedition. And they put me in the Expedition, and I'm like, I kind of like this a lot. It's got a ton of technology. It's very roomy. The kids in the back. But it's a tank. And there's a part of me that I think I'm getting ready to purchase an Expedition. And there's a part of me that wonders what my green imprint on the world is going to be. But there's another part of me that's like, it's the car that I like the most. It's got a bunch of badass technology. I like the platinum level packaging. And I'm getting ready to do this. And I think I'm going to have the biggest car in the neighborhood because of it. Make me feel good, guys, that I'm about to become a tank driver.
Do it, dude. I wish I could get into a vehicle like that, man. Like, just get it done. I mean, if they're giving you a good deal, you can afford it. Like, just get that done, man. That's an awesome car. So your carbon footprint. Get the hell out of here, man.
Like, it has an EcoBoost though, doesn't it, Catch?
I mean, no idea.
Come on.
It's got technology. Who gives a shit about? I don't know.
You do have an EcoBoost.
I think it does have an EcoBoost.
Yeah, I think you're right, Omar.
Most sports do. So if you, from that standpoint, Catch, you're great. If you just look into that, you'll feel very good about your purchase.
What color are you looking at, Catch?
That's the I feel like it's either white platinum or it's black. It's one of the two.
Yeah,
and
smart. I like it.
Love it.
Catch. I'm a Ford guy, Catch. I'm a Ford guy.
That's a clean
Ford's
vehicle.
In my blood, man. I love Fords. That's all I own.
Should we take a straw poll vote on the color?
Let me pull up.
I feel like the white is a more elegant color, whereas maybe a little bit more plush, whereas black is a little bit more indiscreet. Like, you can hide a little bit more.
Catch. I'm just looking at this white one. It's got, I would go white platinum for sure. That car is clean. Oh, and the interior on this thing.
No, it's pretty
Gee
sick.
Gee whiz, dude.
It's pretty sick.
Talk about all the room, and there's just gadgets, and there's little flips and switches. It's like you're in a cockpit of an airplane or something.
You know what my favorite
amenity
is? They have a car charger. Like, it basically is the one where, like, they have it set up so that you just put your phone into a slot and it charges it. Like, one of those, what do you call them? Like, when you set them down at home and you put them on one of those bays or whatever they're called.
Yeah. Wireless.
That I don't have to deal with a USB cord to charge my phone is like one of my favorite little amenity to that, because not even Mercedes has that. Like, it's such a pain in the ass to like reach into the console and try to stick in a USB cord, and then I think I'm gonna be in a Ford pretty soon. I'm about to be in an American car for the first time since 2004.
Dude, took you long enough. You'll hate parking it, Catch, but you'll love the space, especially with kids. I mean, we've always had, you know, got four kids, so my wife's always driven kind of crossovers and shit. I've always thought, like, man, an Expedition would be fantastic, but we've just gone kind of a smaller route. But, yeah, you'll love that, dude, just hauling kids around and shit. It's been a long time coming. Do it. You'll love it.
Anwar, you're going to – I'm in a loner right now. Like, they let me take one home last night. Oh. And so Anwar and I are about to go grab some lunch. And so you will see me in, it's silver. So I won't probably drive. That won't be my future car. I think I'm going to take the white Platinum that showed up at the dealership yesterday and Dan Covert's wife was driving it and I'm going to take it from her.
Oh, yeah, man.
That'd be a power move.
That is a power move.
Look, man, you got kids. You're going to be going to elementary school. You're going to have tons of activities that you're going to have to do drop-offs and may get into sports or something like that. Like, you need something roomy like that. And it's a nice car. So it won't be a step down from what you had at all.
I feel like Tony Soprano because, you know, like, big guy in a big car. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I was driving around yesterday feeling very Tony Soprano-ish.
Well, I've been a truck guy for 20 years, and I know it's not the Expedition, but I recently went down to a car, and it's fun driving a car. I get, but man, I miss the size of a truck, and you'll love the size of that sucker, dude. Do it. I mean, 100 times over, do it. You'll love it.
My kids got in the back yesterday, and they played House in the back.
yeah, they're that big.
It'd be great for your drives to Houston and stuff, Catch. Like, it's a smooth ride, right?
It rides like it absolutely rides better than my Mercedes. It is smooth.
Ooh. Oh, you gotta do it. Get in the hookup. And now you can sell what you're preaching as far as Covert and Hutto.
Yeah, well, there's no bigger endorsement. Then I went down there, they treated me great, and I walked out with the baddest mother they had on the lot.
And I'll back you up on that. I bought my mother-in-law, or didn't buy her, I helped her buy a car. And first call I made was to Dan Covert, and man, they took freaking amazing care of her. I mean, anybody who doesn't make that their first call is making a mistake. And that's, I know they're a sponsor, but I'm just being honest. And if you don't call Covert Ford, you're making a mistake to not let that be your first call. So.
The only problem I had yesterday is that too many people wanted to help me because everybody had a recruiting question. Like, I was getting help by Mark, but like other people were coming over and they were like, you know, you should do this. And oh, by the way, what did you think about that offensive lineman? What about Mookie? Like, there was the recruiting excitement is in the air. Thank you guys. You guys have, that was the final step of the process I needed. Cause I'm going from a car. The Expedition is a big vehicle. My next door neighbor walked over yesterday. My next door neighbor never talks to me ever. Like, he's a decent enough guy, but we're just not boys or anything like that. And he kind of took like a few steps into my yard and he just goes, that's big. Like, it is. It is big. The tires are big. The car is big. Watch out, everybody. When you next see me in a car driving the streets of Austin, it will be in an Expedition. It'll be the elegant white that I'm going to steal from Dan Covert's wife. And I'm excited about it now. You guys have given me the pep talk that I needed as I make the transition from one car to the other. And on that note, thank you for listening to the Ticket City podcast. Go to 1-800-SOLD-OUT, TicketCity.com. Call and be like, I want to talk to the Orange Bloods guy. Let me get my rep so that they can give you a deal that gives back to you. And like I said, you know, one of the things we love about an Orange Blood subscription for you guys is that over the course of the year, we want for it to be able to give back to you in a way that the subscription pays for itself and you never leave because the hookups are always legit. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Don't forget about all of our podcasts over on the Yak. I've got one more coming out this weekend. Before the weekend, I'm going to do a bit of an Oscars preview. I don't care if you hate movies or not. I've seen too damn many of them not to talk about it. So I may do a little bit of a football/movie one. I know Dustin's probably good. Dustin,
is like cranking them out left and right. And if I know Anwar, he'll probably have one more before the week is over anyway. By the way, everybody, small round of applause. Anwar's podcasts are easily among the most favorite among the Yak. I'm actually going to talk with him at lunch today about how well his podcast is doing and how we can take it to the next level with him. On that note, again, thanks for listening. We'll do it next week. You guys be good to each other. No, I'm not even going to say it. I'm about to say a trolling thing at the end, and I won't. I'll just say bye. Bye-bye.